You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XMFC Channel 85. We are in the green room. Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, and getting the call-up from the bullpen. He is a starting, I don't know, commentator now? Ben the Research Bear, the king of takes.
Ben.
He of the Baron T.
Commentator?
I don't know, whatever you would call it. What do you call it? What do you think of yourself when you're, you know, on Monday mornings when you wake up and you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and you think, today's the day that I drop a Baron T on the world?
I'm mostly thinking, you know, just a driver of conversation, you know. Don't worry about
it. Let me ask you a question, if you're a bullpen guy.
Yeah.
If I beam Wiebe, are you making the full sprint from the bullpen all the way out for the brawl?
No, I don't understand those people. You're not going to make it in time. Like, no. No.
You're just doing it for the show.
It's such a show move to sprint out during a brawl. Like, you're not getting anywhere, man. Like, just stop.
What's your favorite soccer tough guy move? What's your, like, on the field? Because there was a great one in Toronto. The Montreal fan yelling up at Toronto fans who are literally 500 feet away and just like,
no.
Come at me, bro, come at me. You were separated by security and 500 feet of elevation. Like, you're not tough.
On the field, it's pretty clear that the biggest tough guy, not tough guy move is to do, like, the forehead against forehead thing. Yeah. Like, you're actually going to headbutt him, even though we all know that you're not.
Right.
Like, I think Bradley and Jamile did it this weekend.
Jamile, he got things going. There's a little bit of heat.
He was going after it. But, that's, like, no, neither of you are doing anything. I've seen that happen 500 times.
Mine is the one where you yell, and you yell at the guy as if you're going to fight them, and then when someone finally gets in between you walk away. You go after them. Because now you know you can't.
Yeah.
And you've seen ones awkward where it's like took a really long time for a teammate to get in between, and now it's like, well, clearly you weren't actually going to go after him.
It's the NBA move, the homie back.
Yeah,
same kind of deal.
Yeah, you wait till the crowd gets there, and then you're trying to get
over. Then I'm going to throw some punches over.
We're talking about
this. We don't throw punches.
No punches. Okay, got it.
Stay within the lines here. Look, Heineken Rivalry Week was a blast. Obviously, it inspired us. We're so happy you're here with us to start the week. A big week. U.S. national team gathering in New Jersey for a big game on Friday against Costa Rica. The Hex rolls on. Then on Tuesday, they are in Honduras. Coming up after the break, we've got Tim Howard, longtime goalkeeper for the U.S., now with the Colorado Rapids. You'll definitely want to stick around for that one, and we've got plenty of MLS to talk about. Dave and I have been coast to coast, west to east over the last 8 days, 6 cities, 6 shows, Extra Time Live, driven by Continental. Thank you so much if you've watched. If you haven't, boo. No, I'm just kidding. It's okay. Maybe it's not at the right time for you. But either way, go like the Facebook page, facebook.com/Extra Time Live.
If you've been in the comment section and you want to know, no, I only own one hat. If you want to send me another hat, feel free to send me another hat.
Now he's
That's false. I've seen him wear other hats.
He's begging for hats on Extra Time Radio. The Rapids hat has gotten a workout.
Yeah, shout out to my guys. Now. Well, no, shout out to my guys Gibberish who made this official MLS stuff.
Shout out to Meg.
It would be a company called Gibberish that makes the hat that you wore for every single show.
Not every show.
Did you guys miss me?
Yeah. We missed you. Baron T's, the weasel laugh, all of it.
The weasel laugh? How is it a weasel laugh? Get out of here with that. I mean, I saw you briefly on Friday night at RBA.
I remember, you know.
Yes.
But then, you know, I was in the press box. You guys were out gallivanting around.
Once our show's over, we're not working anymore.
No.
We become fans.
We're experiencing the game. We did a lot of that this weekend.
Loyal to the seats.
By the way, we experienced Toronto FC, Montreal, the 401 Derby, the Canadian Classico, whatever you want to call it. Two teams, red and blue of Canada, that like to get after it. This was Estad Saputo. This was a highlight for me among MLS stadium visits, among MLS games. Certainly, I'll limit that to the regular season, I think. But there was just something special about this. And Estad Saputo is so intimate. it kind of feels low to the ground and jammed in there. It was jam-packed. We went around trying to find a seat because the press box is full, and you know we're trying to watch it as a fan would, and we got kicked out of multiple seats. Finally found one.
Top row.
Yeah.
Top row.
It was a great view. Yeah.
Wait, but like no one recognized you guys as celebrities and like we're like,
we got
like,
some recognition.
Like you guys can take my seats.
Yeah,
since
they,
you guys
saw, they recognized
big,
the
big
cap.
Shots.
Everybody liked the cap.
Yeah, everyone saw the Rapids hat.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
That setting is unbelievable. You've got like Olympic Stadium behind you, the city in the distance, the evergreen pine trees
the
on the sign.
Evergreens were beautiful. Yeah.
And
it was like 68 degrees.
Yeah, it was perfect.
Shade. It was kind of warm in the sun, but like in the best summer way.
The atmosphere was perfect. The only thing that wasn't perfect was the fact that TFC is a lot better than Montreal right now.
And that's pretty incredible considering Montreal rolled in on four straight wins.
Yeah.
And Piatti was just like ripping people to shreds. And Jamiley, we've gone on and on about this guy. He's been an absolute revelation for them.
He was not this weekend.
No. A lot of giving the ball away.
His
bad
touch
fouls.
Was poor.
Yeah, it was a tough one for Montreal fans. But you said it, Toronto FC, they've got a chance. They've got a chance to make history. Right now they're on pace for a little bit, tad more than 70 points, which would be a record in MLS. You're talking about 98 Galaxy, 2011 Galaxy, 2012 San Jose Earthquakes. It all kind of approached that number, and I think you can
put 2 points per game.
Yeah, in that conversation. And of course, there are other teams that, you know, maybe not at the point totals, but were very, very good teams. So those DC teams back in the day.
So here's the thing for me with Toronto is it's not just the points per game because I watch the games and I don't just look at the stats.
Correct. Yeah, we're trying to measure here.
Right. It's the domination against NYCFC, the win against Chicago, the domination of Montreal yesterday. To me, those were the three best teams in the league outside of them, at least in the Eastern Conference.
East.
Yeah. And they just handled all of them. They also handled Portland at home, although it was
and
a week in Portland.
And also Philadelphia midweek, where it was just like an afterthought. Like,
I think TFC knows that Philadelphia is an auto win at this point with what they've done to them in the past 2 years.
Yeah, look, you're looking at right now 9 games without a loss for Toronto.
And against
the best
teams
in the league. On the whole year. And had they not started the year with 4 draws out of 5, these draws, this is going to bite them. Like, if they're trying to think about history here. 0-0 to start against RSL, 2-2 against Philly, 0-0 Sporting, 2-2 Atlanta. Like, all games that, looking at this team, had they been in a little bit better form, you figure they'd probably pick up at least 2 wins.
Javinko missed the PK and the RSL game.
Yeah.
So otherwise, they wouldn't have won that game.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it just looks so easy. Like, they never look like they're never out of position. They never look like they're going to be threatened. Like, it just, they just, like, kind of, it looks, they're, like, waltzing through these games. Like, which is not something that we see in MLS, where most of the teams are pretty similar in terms of talent.
Yeah.
And we don't see like these teams like Barcelona, Madrid, like what they do to like teams in Spain. We just don't see it, but this is what we're seeing in MLS right now.
TFC, I'd say Montreal had some energy early on. The moment TFC scored, it was like the game was over.
Yeah.
TFC just locked it down, no questions asked. And then when you push numbers forward, they're so lethal man for man that they don't need to counter with numbers. It can be just Javinko. Toshon Ricketts had a gorgeous header that Evan Bush made a big save on. Otherwise, that game ends 4-1.
Marky Delgado, the underrated part of this, and I mentioned Marky Delgado because Greg Vanney's got – you talk about waltzes. Greg Vanney's got like 30 dance partners he's not afraid to use or to dance with, I should say, if I want to continue this analogy. Any of them. But look, this team is stacked. They're loaded. We've said it before. Tim Bezpachinko has pulled from every single mechanism you can possibly pull from and gotten difference makers. From it, gotten above average MLS players, and the result is a team that I think has a very good chance, and I think will win the double. You can almost just give that to them right now. They're gonna win the Supporters Shield. If you look at the standings,
they're at 96%, I think. On
yeah, they're 9 points clear in the East. 9 points. So the NYCFC has one game in hand. Nobody else is even close. And the West,
95%.
Give me a break. Nobody in the West is gonna catch them right now. They are 14 points clear of Seattle Sounders.
So they're chasing the Goonies for that all-time record. Steven Bateshore, Justin Morrow, the fullbacks on the Goonies.
Yeah.
If you are superstitious and an MLS GM or coach, I feel like you have to go out and just give a king's ransom to get
one of
those.
How'd that work out for the Colorado Rapids this year? Alan Gordon?
No,
yeah, choose your Goonie alum wisely.
He's not the one.
I know,
it's the fullback pairing. that makes the team, even though Betashore has barely played this year.
Yeah, and look, Raheem Edwards is an afterthought now. Hassler has been good. Betashore comes in, and I believe he delivered the cross to Giovinco on just the gut punch after Piatti pulls one back, and the whole stadium's like, oh, maybe just no.
Yeah.
No, here comes Sebastian Giovinco.
Scoring goals while the bell is ringing.
By the way, you mentioned that missed PK. Just have him take, you know what, forget PKs for Giovinco. He'd be like, you know what, I'm actually going to take it about 5 yards back of the 18 on the left side, right even with that post, and just put it inside. This guy is
layups.
He's automatic.
Layups.
He's automatic. It's so incredible. Toronto FC, there's no doubt they're the best in MLS this year. I think that there's a very, very good chance that they're going to be the best in MLS of all time towards the end of the season. But it's not going to be easy for them. Some games coming up here. You're looking at going to San Jose. San Jose is not good on the road. They're okay at home, and they're desperate. Then you're at L.A. That should be a win because everybody wins at L.A. We'll get to that in just a second. Versus Montreal, that's where it starts to get interesting because they have two games at home against Montreal. At the outset, they're at Atlanta in the final day. They're home against the Red Bulls. It's not going to be easy. I think this team, you know what? I'm not ready to put a guarantee on it. We'll save that for the mailbag. We'll be there in just a little bit. Let's talk about the New York Derby, though, because New York is blue for the very first time. They had been on the wrong end of a red wedding. They had been on the wrong end about just about every result you can think of until this year. And then they came out and did the business. They had already sealed it up. Two wins before this game on Friday night. 1-1. Once again, we're going to sit here and talk about probably two things. Jesse Marsh saying that the Red Bulls don't get the respect they deserve. Probably true. Number two, the Red Bulls are unable to break teams down that take away that central channel and BWP and a direct path between he and Sasha Kljestan. They're way too predictable, and we saw it in this game at home. They did not create chances from the run of play that were truly threatening in large numbers.
I mean, first thing is Jesse could say whatever he wants. It's clearly there's clearly a strategy to what he's putting out in the media. He's trying to psych up his own team, the nobody believes in us thing.
He's using you, Ben.
He's using me personally. I feel used right now. The second thing is, I mean, that game, it was all just gummed up in the midfield.
Yeah.
And that was without NYC playing without their best player from the first derby of this year, Yongel Herrera. We don't know what the game would have looked like then because Herrera dominated that game. But with the numbers they've put in the midfield, the Red Bulls, it just – you would have thought they would have been able to outmatch a team that was playing without one of their better players, but they just – couldn't break him down. They couldn't do anything.
Oh, Alex Ring is class, too. So even when you lose Herrera, you've got a guy in there who covers ground, who's so clean out of the tackle with his first one or two touches to spray the ball.
That's a really good point. It's not just about winning the ball with Ring. He wins it, and his head is up. He's on the ball. It's in position to move it, and then he moves it.
And they didn't start Jonathan Lewis. They started Rodney Wallace, who has been great for them. But Lewis gives you even more of an attacking verve there. Rodney Wallace covers the ground. He works hard. And I think they put him out there to kind of try and stunt what the wingbacks do for New York. I think you need Kamar Lawrence to play left back, and you need Tyler Adams at right wing back. Kamar Lawrence, not a center back or whatever they're going to call it, and you're losing something in the attack because, as you said, that the gaps down the middle don't exist. The whole Red Bull attack comes through crosses. Kamar Lawrence, the best crosser on this team. Bradley Wright Phillips, phenomenal in the air. Great finisher in the box. I don't know why you would take that away from your team. So I think you need to find a way to get him out there. Fidel Escobar has been very good. So defensively, they've gotten better. But this goal, the goal from NYCFC was gorgeous, just end-to-end passing and movement.
Yeah, I think Jesse was really afraid of Jack Harrison, obviously.
Yeah.
And he needed another strong defender in addition to the wingback that was out there. I just think you can't be that afraid. You have to trust your guys to do their jobs in the positions that they know best. And moving Adams from the right side to the left side, I wasn't sure.
The legend, Gonzalo Verón, with the penalty kick to even this one up. I think it's a result that NYCFC will take all day, every day. But I look at, you mentioned Jonathan Lewis. You're talking about Rodney Wallace, Jack Harrison, even a Tommy McNamara, kind of up and down this roster. Sometimes Kyrie Shelton will play out there. Patrick Vieira and Claudio Reyna, I think, have done a great job of recognizing where they need numbers and where they need, like, a dynamic presence on this team. David Villa is going to play up in the middle. He's going to play up top. He's going to be that guy. You don't need to go out and spend a ton of money on your backup forward. Go get Sean Okoli to fill in every now and then. Maybe Kyrie Shelton can as well. It's all about the guys getting him the ball and taking attention away from him, and they have just an army of dudes on those flanks who can absolutely make a difference. And then in the offseason, when you go upgrade the center back position, still not top tier, but it's good enough,
yeah.
And you make your central midfield one of the best in the league with a young guy and in your prime guy and Yael Herrera and Ring, that's the difference. Second place, your New York is blue.
We've just covered the whole roster, so I don't want to like overkill it, but the recognition of what Maxi Morales does as a player and how he could fill in for Frank Lampard. He's not Frank Lampard, but the goals
he's like half of Frank Lampard.
Right. But the goals he scores are all either the run off of Villa so Villa can play the assist or the late run into the box because they have these army of wingers who can cut the ball back. That's what Frank Lampard was so good at was. It was a secondary runner behind Villa. And Maxi Morales isn't that player, but he's given them similar attributes, and he covers a lot of ground for them. And he has been the perfect addition, which to see a guy playing part-time at Lyon and saying this is the guy who's going to fill in for Frank Lampard is great scouting, great recognition, and they've done very well.
I think you can throw Victor Vasquez, that same sort of concept. Hey, this is a guy who's not getting time. He could be a game changer in this league, and absolutely he has been. I want to talk about Seattle-Portland, Cascadia. We always do. This was another 1-1 draw to finish off Sunday night. But I want to get to Dallas and Chicago first. We're talking about Toronto FC being this juggernaut, rolling along. Nothing can stop them. At points, we've talked about both of those teams, not in those terms, but certainly in best of MLS, best of their conference terms. I just want to throw this out there right now. Dallas are out of the playoff field. They are, based on wins. They're
on points per game
of the playoff field. Yeah, we see you. You're just looking at the stats. Don't worry about it. They're out of the playoff field. Seventh right now. Chicago Fire, they're in fourth, but they've lost, six out of seven, is it, at this point? And it's starting to get real, real troublesome in Chicago. What happened? Which side should be more concerned? I mean, we went from supporters' shield with Dallas to – I hope we make the playoffs, and that being no guarantee in a weak Western Conference. And Chicago, post All-Star break, really, post 4th of July, actually, just straight off a cliff.
I think you need to be more concerned if you're a Dallas fan than if you're a Chicago fan. Chicago, I think you can point to some issues that are out of their control that have contributed to this. They haven't had both of the starting fullbacks over this entire stretch, basically. They've been without a center back. They're one of their best. I mean, they're the other center back. So, they're dealing with a lot of issues along the back line. Obviously, I think teams have figured out the way they want to play a little bit. It took half a season, but teams are realizing what they try to do. Velko is trying to figure out what the hell he wants to do with Schweinsteiger dropping back a bit or playing him more forward. He hasn't really figured out what he wants to do with him once these teams have adjusted. Dallas, they've had all their guys, basically. Besides Mara, they were doing fine this whole season.
Walker Zimmerman's been hurt. That's one of the best center backs in Major
League
Soccer.
That's not coinciding with this.
You had Kellen Acosta and Matt Hedges both on national team duty.
They've had all those guys back for a month now.
Okay, I understand that. But if I'm Dallas, I'm thinking
and
one.
And they've dropped all these results with that.
Right. I'm thinking one. Well, Zimmerman hasn't been back. Two,
Zimmerman was in and out of lineup. We don't know why he was in and out. It wasn't because of injury.
Well, they're saying that it is. They're saying that it is, and they're saying that it's fitness as well. One is whatever you get from Mauro Diaz going forward is going to be better than what you've gotten, and he will not be back to himself this year because that's just the nature of that injury. Two is for Dallas, you've shown that you can win multiple ways. I get that they're not doing it right now, but they don't need to be explosive. And three,
how are they going to score goals?
Three is Maxi Urruti goes in spells. Last year, he went into a dry spell. U.S. Open Cup final, he scored and was on fire to close out the season. So when Maxi Urruti gets right, which he will because that's who Maxi Urruti is, this is a guarantee that this was going to happen, that he was going to go dry, and it's a guarantee almost that he will get hot again.
Who else is scoring goals in this team?
On this team?
Roland Lama has like 8 goals and 7 of them are in 2 games.
Yeah, not many. Not many people are scoring goals. They don't need to, though. If they get Zimmerman back and they get that defense where it's supposed to be, they're one of the best in the league, right?
I'm just going to throw something out here. This is rolling around Dallas right now, and these are reports from some Spanish-language reporters out there.
Don't do that. This is Mikey Barrios.
No, I'm just saying this has been Barrios and Urruti to San Lorenzo.
No.
They're saying money's on the table, multiple millions for both of them. I don't know. All the talk from Dallas about going after it this year, about trying to get it with Zimmerman, with Acosta facing similar things. I know there's a team that says, hey, we got to be a team that sells players. We got to be a team that cycles through, reinvests.
That's crazy,
but
though.
Look, there's some troublesome times in Dallas. They got to find a way out of it right now because this has been an absolute tailspin. Columbus, not a good loss. Terrible draw against Houston. Horrible. No good. Very bad draw to be up 3-1.
You're writing children's books over here.
Yeah, hey, and only get one. Right now they're playing children's soccer. I'm just saying. It's not been good for Dallas. On the flip side, I think they've got more to worry about because they're out of the playoffs, but they got game in hands. Chicago Fire fans have got to be wondering if this was a mirage.
It wasn't a mirage. It's just, yeah, okay, one thing is, like Ben said, everyone's figured out how to play against them.
Right.
If you sit back and you put numbers behind the ball, they, like we talked about the Red Bulls, doesn't have someone who really will take two or three defenders on like Piatti does, like Valeri does, and well, change the game. Yeah. And two, if you drop deep, a calm speed can't really beat you.
That's the thing. That's the thing to me. Because to me, they're obviously the most dangerous. David Akam's in the open field. He's going at defenders. Nikolic is making a run to the near post or to the far post, just trying to get in a spot. And with Nikolic on the field and teams packing it in against you, he can't really provide much. He's more of a poacher. He's not going to be dynamic on the ball. Really, all the teams have to do is focus on stopping David Akam, which is what we saw in Minnesota do. We have an article on MLSoccer.com today on the coaching moves by Sam Pollock, just talking about how Minnesota focused all their attention on stopping David Akam, bunkering in, and just and they didn't really have an answer.
I would done Lottie getting the goals. Two goals. David Goss here pulled like every muscle in his body celebrating these things.
I guarantee
it was
them.
A beautiful thing. By the way, LA Galaxy lose at home again. I mean, it's not even – we won't even talk about it, really, unless we hit it in the mailbag, because this is what happened. San Jose, 3-0. It's just gone from bad to worse for the Galaxy. Trouble sometimes for them. Meanwhile, RSL, huge win for them. We got to go to the break here. We got Tim Howard on the other side and U.S. National Team roster news. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com. Or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions. I'll take you anywhere I go,
anywhere. I'll take you anywhere I go, anywhere. Back at Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Hanging out in the green room talking U.S. national team. Tim Howard of the Colorado Rapids, of course, long time U.S. goalkeeper, is coming up in just 1 second. The roster is out for Bruce Arena for games against Costa Rica on Friday and Honduras on Tuesday. They'll be at Red Bull Arena on Friday. And in San Pedro Sula on Tuesday, we will preview those games in their entirety later this week and then on Monday or Tuesday, depends on where you're listening here. The roster is 26 men. It's what we expected, guys. There's really no surprises here. The only big missing pieces, DeAndre Yedlin and John Brooks. Of course, both of those players are injured. But apart from that, it's hard to say that there are quote-unquote snubs. You've got Eric Lehigh coming into the team. Matt Hedges stuck around despite a tough Gold Cup. I think that's probably the right decision by Bruce in that sense. Christian Roldan is a guy that people have gotten really excited about being on the roster here, a guy who got an opportunity to be with the squad. And then Chris Wondolowski is there, but you know, the Altidores, Dempseys, Morrises, and Bobby Woods of the world are here as well. So odds of him getting playing time are probably low. What do we take from this? This is just Bruce saying, time to win. Time to get dubs. We're third place in the Hex. We got 8 points. Costa Rica's in 11th. We can reel them back. Mexico's in 14. They're probably too far away to catch them. Let's go qualify.
Yeah, this is probably the toughest game they have left. At least the most important, I think, because you can catch Costa Rica, because you were never going to win at Costa Rica, even though the performance under Jurgen Klinsmann was horrible. They were never going to win that game anyway.
Also, home games, if you're saying like, oh, yeah, but they go to San Pedro Sula, that's tougher. Like, road games are just icing on the cake. Home games, you got to get 3 points.
So this is the toughest home game left. So this is the hardest game in my mind. This is the biggest game. They've taken a little bit of a chance putting it in New Jersey at Red Bull Arena.
I don't understand.
Yeah, I've been there for 2 Costa Rica games in the last year or so, and they bring huge crowds. So it's not going to be the easiest environment. It's going to be energetic. It's going to be loud. It's going to be fun. But it's not going to be the easiest environment, and the U.S. has to get 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, the roster is just – if you would have told me there's 26 players on this roster, I probably could have – got 24 of them. 24
that.
Or 25. I'll guarantee that. Everyone's all up in arms about Wando. I don't think he's going to see any – I mean, he's not going to see the field. I think they'll probably send him home before the games even start probably. He's a great presence in training. You know he's going to go give 100% in training every day. That's what you want to see in those types of depth players. Christian Roldan, good for him. He's really playing really well right now, but I don't think he's going to see the field either. So we can talk about the surprise inclusions or whatever.
So I think,
but I don't think they really matter at all.
Right. So the biggest questions right now are who fills in for Brooks and for Yedlin, and how Fabian Johnson fits in this team. Because we've seen them play.
God, that's been a question for years,
right?
Huh? Yeah.
But we've seen them play in a couple different systems. Pulisic has to be in the center of the field. We know that. So the question is, does Johnson play at left back, left wing? If Viafania's playing at left back and Johnson's playing at left wing, can he come in field and connect with those players? Because Viafania's going to run that line for you.
You guys are going to talk about this on Thursday. But I think there's a really good possibility you see a 4-1-3-2 by Bruce. Because you can't – I mean, Kellen Acosta, can you really trust him right now? I don't think you can. I think you just throw two forwards up there and you go for it. I mean, I know it's –
Unless
Costa Rica.
You trust Dax to play alongside
so.
Michael Bradley.
I don't think so.
I mean, the flip side of that is...
If he doesn't trust Dax to play alongside him, if it's not a formational thing and he doesn't trust him to play alongside him, then what are you calling him in for? Just as a backup to Bradley?
And have rolled on there as well.
Do you really trust him then to fill in for Bradley?
Maybe that's the San Pedro Sula thing. I don't know. I do think that Costa Rica's their best chance of hurting you is on the counter. And so if you just have one in there and it's Michael Bradley who, you know... God bless him. I have a U.S. national team jersey with his name on it. He was the guy that when he was coming up, I was all about. But he wanders a little bit in that lone defensive role. And this is a team, Costa Rica, that might be able to catch him out. Look, we'll get into the nitty-gritty of it with Matt Doyle later this week. Make sure you tune in on Thursday if you download the podcast and on Friday on SiriusXMFC Channel 85.
Thursday we might be out with the team.
Yeah, sounds like we're going to be in New Jersey hanging out with somebody at the hotel. So that'll be sweet. In the meantime, Tim Howard is on the line right now. Longtime U.S. national team goalkeeper, an absolute legend. Let's see what's up. Tim, how's it going, man?
It's great. How are you?
We're doing well. Coming off a bit of travel, and you're embarking on some for the international game, but you're coming home, man, back to New Jersey. How does it feel?
Great. It's always good to be home. Still have a ton of friends that live around here, live in New York City, so it'll be good to see pretty much everyone.
What was your reaction when you found out that the U.S. was going to host this game here?
Well, I was excited. I always love coming back, and as I said, it's just, when you're home, it feels good, so... kind of been anticipating it, marked it on the calendar, and happy it's here.
Red Bull Arena, obviously a beautiful facility. We were out there this week for Rivalry Week, both sides of New York. As a local guy, when you see that stadium built in your state with the Red Bulls playing there, I know it's not the same as the Metros, but in many ways the spirit is the same. How does that make you feel? And when you see the New York Derby, what do you think? That would have been great for you to be a part of.
It would have. I'm proud of the fact that I was here all those years that it was a pipe dream. A lot of people worked tirelessly who aren't with the organization anymore, or and not even really the same organization. But I remember those days when it was talked about that there was this place in Harrison and we were going to build a stadium, and it never ever happened. So to be able to come back, see it, and also to play in it is pretty special.
17 years I was seeing the other day. That has been how long it's been since you debuted with Metro. You're ever present, Tim. You're here. This is your thing. We don't see you leaving the stage anytime soon. But when you think about it being 17 years as a pro now, what stands out to you? And if you think back to those Metro Stars days, what are your kind of everlasting memories?
Well, it's funny. I think someone got it wrong. It's been 19 years because I made my debut in 1998, so it's been even longer. It's been special. I think when you have this type of longevity, you're doing something right. But I also think you have to count your blessings and appreciate the fact that you've been around some great teams and been a part of some good organizations. I'm just lucky. I think now, particularly towards the back end of my career, I realize how special playing football every day is. And so I've ever taken it for granted. I certainly don't now.
Metro Stars days, give us some good memories, man. That's before my time really, really being engaged in MLS. I have to imagine it was a different time than you're experiencing right now with the Rapids.
It was special to be a part of that because what you see today is the MLS is a million miles from where we were back in 1998. And, it's hard to... It's hard to even fathom, with the stadiums and, twice as many teams and each team having their own training ground. And, it's you know, we were wearing, you know, we had one or two sets of Nike T-shirts back then with your number on it, and they were, you know, you wore them every day, and it was, you know, it's not what it was today.
Those DC United teams back then, those top teams, LA Galaxy, yep, yourselves with the Metros, compared to TFC, Seattle Sounders, who are on top right now, Portland, mm-hmm, Timbers, how do the teams compare?
Well, those are some good teams. You know, I think it'd be scary to kind of see, you know, DC United with John Harkes and Marco Echeverri and Raul Diaz Arce versus, you know, the league leaders now, Toronto. I think it's hard to kind of go between eras and decades, but that would be a heck of a matchup. And they were formidable, those teams, you know, the Galaxy teams and the DC United teams back then, because, you know, I played against them, and it was the same feeling you get today when you play, you know, a team like TFC. You know, they're hard to play against. The expectation is they're going to win every game. They're going to wipe the floor with you. And that's, you know, it's a scary thought, but it's so great for the league. Well, I mean, this league has grown leaps and bounds.
Toronto FC are chasing history. Of course, Sebastian Giovinco already has MLS history when it comes to free kicks. Put another one in the back of the net yesterday. Who's the guy outside of Giovinco, maybe earlier in your career and now, that when they stood up for the free kick or when they got on the ball in a good shooting position, you just knew that they were going to put it in a tough place? Who are the best shooters you've come up against in MLS?
Well, you know, as you rightfully said, I mean, it's impressive when you're watching Giovinco stand over the ball, because just when you think he's going to dip one over the wall, I think last week he went to the goalkeeper's side, and you know, he's a special, special player, and he continues to prove that. You know, down the years, I think you look at, I think Risto Stoichkov, he stands out as one, you know, those really good Chicago teams of Bob Bradley's era. You know, there was, you know, Marco Echeverri, of course, who I mentioned before, incredibly talented left footer. So there have been some good ones.
I want to ask you about Tim McQueen before we move on to the U.S. and the Rapids as well. I saw him get hired for Orlando, and I've read about the story of kind of your early career and youth career and you know, upcoming as a goalkeeper, and Tim McQueen was a huge part of that. Can you tell me how he found you, how you got into this game, kind of the doors that he opened? I imagine his name means a lot to your career.
Oh, I owe everything to Tim McQueen. Everything I know about goalkeeping and how I got started in goalkeeping, he's my dearest friend, even to this day. But you know, I was a young kid running around the fields of New Jersey, and I went to one of his soccer camps, and he was this young, brash, 20-something-year-old camp counselor, and you know, you talk about the odd couple, but you know, he came from nothing, you know, I came from nothing, and he saw something in me, and he just nurtured that a lot of times with an iron fist, but he nurtured that goalkeeping side of me, and you know, he basically trained me for free. You know, from the age of 10 or 11 years old, he trained me until I signed with the Metro Stars, when he was actually the goalkeeper coach there, you know, some 10 years later. Never asked for a dime, never asked for recognition, and was always there to, you know, basically help me throughout my progress.
Tim, you were a great athlete as a kid. You still are. Of course, why goalkeeping? And once he pushed you towards that, did you at any point fight back and think, I want to be out on the field?
No, you know, I think I was, as you said, I was young and athletic and energetic, and I was always sliding around everywhere. And I remember a youth coach saying, like, if you're going to slide around, you got to be in goal. And so I was always a tall kid, and they put me in goal. And to be honest, I flip-flopped back and forth, but it wasn't until, you know, I met Tim McQueen that I really started to love the position. You know, he was so passionate about coaching it that you couldn't help but put the gloves on and feel like, this is something I want to do. I want to be great at this. You know, it's crazy to think, because you're only talking about a 10-year-old, but he had this desire and this fire, you know, to push his goalkeepers. And so it was almost like, this is what I want to be. This is kind of cool, you know? And then that was, you know, nearly 20-some years ago.
We were with Casey Keller last week in Seattle, and we asked him, because it feels like everyone wants to know right now where this position stands in the United States. It was this golden torch that was just passed along for over 25, maybe even 30 years now. Where do you see this position going? What do you see the American goalkeeper right now?
You know, I think it's a good question. I think when you're used to something for so long, it becomes an expectation. And quite honestly, Tony Meola, Casey Keller, Brett Friedel, Marcus Hanneman, myself, Brad Guzan, you expect there to be another one. And those goalkeepers I just named have sacrificed so much, both home and abroad, to be the best and certainly strive for greatness. And I don't think it's America's God-given right to have a top goalkeeper. You know, it has to be earned. And I think for so long it was just kind of flippantly expected that, you know, one comes along, the next one comes along. And that's not always the case. Do I think there'll be another top American goalkeeper? Yeah, I do. But it's not as if it's our God-given right. As I said, these, you know, the guys who I named have spent an entire career and sacrificed pretty much a lifetime to the art of goalkeeping. And so it's not easily given.
I remember a lot of names coming to Everton while you were there, Tim, to be, you know, to train with the club, coming from MLS teams, even some college kids, if I remember right at times. Were those guys invited by you? And it seems like that there's this kind of tradition of both guys helping each other from that top down, but also sometimes the competition being pretty serious, as you've experienced as well. I mean, are you a guy that looks at that next generation and really tries to take them under your wing and bring them up? And how do you do that if you're the guy kind of at the top?
You know, like I always say, if you know, a young goalkeeper, you know, who's, you know, in his early 20s, if he wants advice, or I'm always happy. My phone's always on, and I'll never knock back a call. You know, I'm happy to always help. But they, you know, sometimes they want it, and sometimes they don't want to be baby. They want to stand on their own 2 feet. And at a certain point, they see them. They go from, you know, a friend or a young kid asking questions to competition, right? And so that relationship kind of ebbs and flows. But, you know, for me, I'm always there to, you know, I've seen it. I've seen the good and the bad and everything in between. And so, you know, if one of the younger goalkeepers in the younger generation needed advice or needed help, or, you know, to get to a club to train or whatever, I'd be happy to help. I think we all would.
Let's talk about Christian Pulisic and the U.S. here. You guys have two big games against Costa Rica and Honduras, currently third in the hex on 8 points, but things are trending upward right now with Bruce Arena, that big draw in Azteca. Most people remember that back in June. Pulisic, we're running out of words to describe him. You've seen a lot of very, very talented players up close. When you see him in training, you see him in games, you see what he does at 18 years old, what do you think of? What does he remind you of?
You know, he's special. As you said, you run out of words to describe him because he continues to impress. And I don't know, you know, I feel like every once a generation, maybe, you know, a player comes along and he's a bit of a prodigy, because at 18 years old, I was scared to death of the bright lights and the crowds. And it took me, you know, like a lot of players, it takes you a while to figure it out. And, you know, Christian, he doesn't court the spotlight, but he certainly revels in it, and he's you know, technically he's gifted. His football IQ is incredibly high. His tactical awareness is brilliant. So you have nearly the perfect player at 18, right? Which is crazy to think. And so it's just going to be harnessing that, and for him to continue to play in big games and in big moments for the U.S. and score the goals when needed, control the games, find the pass, be in possession of the ball, all the things that he's very good at now. You know, he needs to keep that up for quite a long time, but he's an incredibly gifted player, and we're lucky to have him.
We just saw Ousmane Dembele get sold for a boatload of money, one of many right now in the international market. I imagine Christian's going to be dealing with that aspect of the game very soon if he's not already in the midst of that. When you look at the world market and what's going on, you look at MLS's place in the market, you know, what does it make you think right now to see these types of numbers thrown around, and on the flip side, to see MLS steadily climbing up the ranks trying to invest as well?
Well, yeah, MLS is steadily climbing the ranks, and it seems like there's more and more money being pumped into the league and to each team every year, and so I think it's great for the league, it's great for the fans, for the players, you know, everyone involved, you know, seems to be benefiting, so that's good. You know, the numbers around the world are staggering, you know, probably not in a good way, but ultimately I think that will come down. you know, it just at the moment it seems as if the numbers are inflated. I can't imagine it will have the ability to stay at that level just because it's too high.
Was there any player, any signing? Obviously, David Beckham's the big one. But when you were overseas, were you raised an eyebrow back at MLS where you're like, oh, wow, like that's a great pickup. Those are good investments.
You know, look, I think what David Beckham and Thierry Henry did for our league is second to none. You know, these are guys who were dominant world footballers, who were iconic footballers. You know, Thierry Henry is... he's got a statue outside of Arsenal Football Club. You know, it's pretty crazy. So when those type of players sign in the league, people take notice. You know, everyone's talking about it. Everyone's wondering, well, can I play over there? What's it all about? And so those are the two that stood out for me the most, but there's been some really good ones.
Bruce Arena, of course, got the best from David Beckham. He's the head coach of the national team right now. That transition is an important one kind of in the narrative of the team leading up to this World Cup between Jurgen to Bruce. We always hear Bruce is a player's coach. Tim,
mm-hmm.
I'm curious, what's your favorite Bruce story? What kind of personifies that player's coach side and just his unique personality? I've never met anybody like him.
Yeah, you might never meet anyone like him. But, you know, I think a lot of the inside stories I probably couldn't tell. You know, what I would say to you is his sense of humor is second to none. You know, I think you know, he takes political correctness and throws it out the door. And he, you know, he's no hold bar with his humor around the team, and it's a good place to be. You know, I think his ability to allow his players to have freedom off the field, and to conversely turn that on the field into an incredible demand. He demands so much from us players when we cross the line. There is no joking. There's nothing that's said in jest. Everything is on task. But then when training's finished, we go about our business and everyone kind of lives their own lives. And it's been a very good balance.
I don't know if you saw his comments today, but he said that New Jersey and Harrison, New Jersey, it's not New York, and New Yorkers don't claim New Jersey. Are you going to have beef with Bruce?
I'm a New Jersey boy, you know, and I think that's probably right, you know, even though I have a love for New York City. But, yeah, I tend to think, certainly in a sports realm, that seems to be the case.
Let's talk about the Rapids, keeping on head coaches. A change there as well. Pablo Mascherini has left the club. They've moved on here. Steve Cook has taken over. What did you see this coming? Was it something that – how did it affect the team? How do you think it'll affect the future of the club? What are you guys trying to build there, and why was this, at least as it was explained to you, the right move?
Well, results hadn't been good enough, right? And we're in a results-oriented business, and so I think we all understand that they can't get rid of 23 players, although they might like to. And so ultimately that axe falls on the manager's head, and so we as players have a responsibility. We take full responsibility as to what has gone on and what's transpired on the field this season. But as an organization, they felt it was time to move forward.
That
happens in this business. And so, like anything else, you know, when things aren't going well, you have to go back to the drawing board and try and get it right. Will we get it right? I think everyone's hopeful of that. But certainly we've got our work cut out for us.
Has this been a tough season for you, Tim, just on the results, especially on the results side after last year? I mean, you guys defensively all the 1-0s, all the way up to the top of the Western Conference, mm-hmm. and then to the mm-hmm. conference finals. I mean, this has to be a tough one, huh?
Very tough. We had some very rough seasons when I was in New York early on, but I was a kid, and so I didn't bear the burden of those results. You know, certainly now as a senior player, as the older, one of the older, but the oldest player, you know, I've been around, and so yeah, these results hurt a lot more. And again, it's quite simply just been not good enough, and so we've got to get that right, all of us.
You said one of the older players, one of the more veteran players. You are Mr. World Cup for the U.S. national team. Of course, getting there is key, but this group, when you look at it compared to what you've seen, compared to what you're seeing around the world, what's the capability, what's the ceiling for this U.S. national team group?
Well, you know, the feeling is we're right in the thick of it. I think it's you know, we if we get the result we need on Friday, we look great. And if we don't, you know, we're in a dogfight. And so I think this team is capable of a lot. We've shown that over the last 10 months. But what happens when we get to World Cup, who knows? We're trying to get there first, you know. But I think the balance of this roster is the best I've ever seen. And I mean that in regards to the fact that we can change the team. We can play one team against Trinidad on Friday and then roll into Mexico and play virtually another team and have no doubts about who's on the field.
Friday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, Costa Rica, Red Bull Arena, ESPN, Unimas, and UDN, Tim Howard and the boys in action. One last one for you, Tim, before we let you go. We love CONCACAF. We love the Champions League. We love qualifying. Up and down, this region is so much fun, sometimes so maddening and weird and strange. Do you have a story, a time, a game, a night at the hotel when they were lighting off fireworks? Is there something about this region, in this region, that you just, when somebody asks you about CONCACAF, you just kind of think of and chuckle to yourself?
Too many stories to tell. You know, there's been, we've been rerouted when we've gone to El Salvador. We've got rerouted to Panama and had to stay there for the night and then fly out again in the morning and play the game. We've been in Costa Rica last cycle when we're supposed to have security, and yet the hotel, there's hundreds of people outside the hotel chanting all night and throwing things at bus windows, and so all the fun stuff that you never hear of, but that goes on.
There you have it. Tim Howard, U.S. National Team in action on Friday. Tim, thank you so much for your time, man.
Thank you, guys.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Now many times I gotta tell you I'm a man in the mission. Many times I gotta tell you I don't need no permission. A human with supervision, ain't no living condition. I'm reaching out to my children, just hoping that they would listen.
Start a new coalition against corrupt politicians. Hanging out with the man, the myth, the legend, the king of takes, Ben the Research Bear. Dave Goss is here too, but I've been with him for, I don't know, it feels like my whole life now. My whole entire life.
Yeah.
Into the mailbag here. Remember, you get us 401-206-0MLS.
Ben, you want to know what it's like being with Weeby, by the way?
No.
Yeah, tell some stories from the road.
First flight of a 6-city, 8-day trip. Weeby shows up late.
Mm-hmm.
Can't check his bag because he's late. Now we're sitting through security. Then he looks at me because my hat gets lost, and I'm waiting for it. And he looks at me like, what, are you crazy? We're going to miss our flight. We got to go.
That is classic.
Because he showed up late,
yeah.
And he doesn't have TSA pre. From that point on, he didn't have TSA pre. Me and John did. So we'd wait for him.
John is our producer, by
who's
the way.
John?
He's actually a project manager.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Wait for Weeby through security every single flight. Today, there is no TSA pre because we're coming from Canada. Weeby goes through first. Our bags get flagged because we have the equipment in it. And Weeby goes, I'm going to go through. I'll see you guys on the other side.
Hey, look, I waited for you on the other side at duty free. That's just
that is
the
most Weeby thing I've heard.
No,
ride or die.
He's just hashtag talent out here.
I'm just a great travel buddy. I'm always considerate. I definitely.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Show up on time.
Then we get off the plane. He left his chips, and he waited to go back on the plane for everyone
chips?
To deboard to get
look,
his bag of chips.
That was the finale to my week. Some nice salt and vinegar chips. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Hit us up at the Hot Take Hotline. We have a Baron T that you owe us here. I think you might owe us multiple Baron T's, Ben, because I don't think we got one last week.
You did. You didn't. You know.
Yeah. So
it,
I think
really
you're
inconsiderate.
On the hook for multiple
really inconsiderate.
Baron T's. Yep.
I mean, I'm just gonna eliminate a bunch of teams here. Let's just do it. Let's get out of here.
We're gonna find out who has the best chance
so
of making a run
this
in Lost
down?
Cup.
Yeah, you might have to write it down. So Colorado's out. LA Galaxy.
No,
out.
You have to say I yeah. Baron T.
I Baron T all of these. LA Galaxy out. DC United done.
And Colorado?
Colorado,
real
yeah.
Real thick limb you're just
Minnesota.
Out onto
Minnesota,
right
you're done. Gone fishing. Philadelphia also done. And lastly for now, we're going to go with Orlando City. Gone fishing.
By the way, 538 has playoff probabilities and odds that are continually updated. Ben Bear just went out and guaranteed that every team with 2% or less percent chance of making the playoffs are not going to make the playoffs.
So again, I think I can't all
gun shy after last year's Seattle Sounders debacle.
I can't. They can't all be ridiculous predictions.
So the Revs are still.
You're still leaving the Revs alive.
Yeah, you left the Revs alive.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
Come on. You have to put you on the spot here. They're going to be alive. You're guaranteeing they're out.
Give me 1 second here. 1 second.
They got 9%. If that's what you're looking for, their your credibility is.
Yeah, they're done.
All right, New England, guarantee out of the playoffs. Not happening this year.
Sorry, guys.
Has Kamar Lawrence taken a free kick yet?
Nope.
Did Dempsey get 4 goals in the Gold Cup yet?
He accounted for 4 goals.
Oh, that's some creative accounting, so to speak. Let's go to the Hot Take Hotline. Remember, you can send your guarantees our way or just Mock Ben's or ours or whoever.
We got a text from I don't know who, and it says RSL push into the playoffs, making FC Dallas a non-playoff team.
We didn't really talk about that big week for RSL. 2 home games, you know, fair enough. You got to win those. But to go 8-1, total cumulative score, work San Jose over, who by extension worked over the Galaxy, who – by extension, are like 7 goals worse.
Let's not play that game.
I mean, why not? We can have a little fun with that.
Let's see, like, if my record league team beats this other team who beats somebody else, who beats somebody in the Open Cup.
Yeah, but your record league team's not playing MLS teams, so you're never going to climb the ladder. You're 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
I can do this.
Don't make it.
It's all good.
RSL, reasonable. Like, would a reasonable person think that perhaps they have a chance? 35 points, 28 games played. 28 is the most in the West other than the Portland Timbers, who are also on 28 but in second. RSL.
It's just too late.
Straight wins.
Yeah. I think if you put pressure on teams in front of you, you know, you have the opportunity that they can stumble. But RSL doesn't have the games in hand, and they drop points when they didn't have guys there and they didn't have guys healthy. And it's unfortunate for them. I think whatever happens to the end of the season is a good thing for the club. And I think it's a good thing for those players. We got another email, a hot take. Let it be known that Justin Glad is responsible for 90% of RSL's turnaround. All attacking players on opposing teams should be groveling at his feet for mercy, which he will not extend. Cameron Eves, RSL fan from Provo. He also then asked, any chance Bruce Arena calls him in sometime soon? Love to see him with USMNT.
Look, we like Justin Glad. We really do. It's too soon for him. If it's too late for RSL, I think right now it's still too soon for him with the guys on that roster. He's got a little bit of developing to do. I thought there was a decent chance that he was not going to finish this game against Colorado. That foul-ish not yellow card call that on Hairston there on the right flank, I think if you call foul, you got to call that a yellow card, and then that's a judgment as to whether it's a foul or not, but probably lucky to finish this game. Great young player, got all the tools. We're talking to Craig Weibel. He's like, look, we think he's going to be there. He's got to grow into his body. He's got to get stronger. Pecky says he's got to read the game a little bit better, eliminate some of those little niggling mistakes that remain, because ultimately as a center back, those are what you're judged on. You know, you could be perfect outside of one or two mistakes, but if those are mistakes that lead to goals, that's a big issue. That's ultimately your job. So I think he's a really talented young player. I love him. He's got a future. I think one day he'll get there. I don't think that you'll see it before 2018.
Some stats for you guys. In the 12 games he has started, RSL have conceded 1.1 goals per game. In the 16 games he did not, they conceded 2.2. In the 12 games he has started, they are averaging 1.8 points per game. They average just 0.9 in the 16 he did not start.
Ooh,
obviously,
sounds like
there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise in these numbers. You know, not everything's relying upon one player, but just an interesting note there.
Yeah,
so I would just say, when you look at the U.S. national team pool at center back, obviously Jonathan Brooks is on a certain level. Of young center backs, Matt Miazga is the next one up. After that, I think Justin Glad's in the conversation for the next guy. I think from what I've seen in limited time, I think he's a better center back than Cameron Carter-Vickers, at least right now. So when you look at that U20 pool.
EPB
played center mid when Glad was playing center back.
I know,
for
I'm just,
a little
just
bit
throwing
reason.
Him out there.
Yeah, he's in that conversation as well. But he's played what?
Walker
7
Zimmerman,
professional
you,
soccer
Walker
games?
Zimmerman's
Walker Zimmerman's
you,
like 5 years older
yeah, I know.
Than him.
I'm just saying, but that's going to be somebody who stands in the way for a while. Walker Zimmerman's still not in his prime. So it's not like you can just be like, hey, he's 5 years older, so wipe him off the mat.
Well,
you got to knock him out of that
who's,
spot.
So you're figuring after this World Cup, you might see – you're not going to see – probably not going to see Matt Beasley that much anymore, I would assume. Jeff Cameron, he's getting up there in age.
Yeah. I don't think he makes it to the next cycle. Yeah.
So there's going to be spots there.
Omar's maybe in that same boat, though. I think.
I think he's got one more in him. Maybe. What is he? 20? What is he? 30?
I don't think Omar goes to the World Cup, but I think he'll be a part of qualifying.
Same thing with Cameron. I think.
Yeah, I would agree.
This is probably the last hurrah for Tim Ream. You would think, but yeah. Who knows? I mean, this is the thing. Like sometimes center backs play on forever.
Or you have a left back that plays until he's 800. So. Yeah.
Whatever DeMarcus Beasley does, I need some of that. Although Bruce Arena said today that he thinks that DeMarcus has the perfect body for longevity, which I was thinking to myself, I must have the perfect body for the opposite of that because I'm just constantly injured and messed up.
But here's the amazing thing. Beasley was always hurt. When he was at PSV, the thought was, and then Man City, if he could stay healthy, he could be, you know, the best U.S. national team field player ever. And he just could not get healthy because he was so thin that he would always get injured. And now it's turned around where there's less impact on his body because he weighs 7 pounds.
And maybe he learned some lessons during those time too. Yeah. He's saying that as far as just like body maintenance, stretching, you know, all the little things that you do to
yoga. How's your yoga game going?
Oh,
okay, I just wanted to check in. I remember those like 3 weeks you were on the show. Just
there was like
hyping up yoga.
Period where that was a real part of my life.
Tom from Pensacola, one. DeMarcus Beasley still getting calls. What a class! But should there be more younger competition? I can still remember how exciting Beasley was in 2002. That was 15 years ago.
Yeah, that
was a
long time ago.
But I think Villafania is taking that job now, so
yeah,
I think
Villafania
maybe there is a little
it's
conversation.
It's his job and Beasley's insurance. Real good insurance.
He's still got to see regular playing time with Santos this year.
He brings up Kellen Rowe, but Kellen Rowe injured, so he can't be a part of that. Is Michael Orozco-Fiscal already out of the pool? He's had a great run in Liga MX lately compared to Matt Hedges. Danny Williams playing in the Premier League. Should he have been in this squad now?
I still remain a little bit baffled as to why Danny Williams can't make his way in here. I mean, the level of talent's not question. I don't think that's in question. He had good performances with the U.S. Jurgen liked him. That's not a end-all be-all for anything but Jurgen. But it's just weird to me that, like, an Eric Lehi could push his way into the squad.
Well, it took Eric Lehi 8 years.
Right, but Bruce obviously recognized talent. He just said, hey, you haven't been getting chances, come on in. Danny Williams wasn't really getting those chances under Klinsmann at the end either.
We've not heard anything, but there's a chance Danny Williams didn't want to come to the Gold Cup because he was a free agent and he had to figure out that contract, and that puts you behind the eight ball now because Bruce doesn't have
a
chance as a senior.
He had to post a bunch of pictures on Instagram. Shout out to that Instagram account. Shout out to Abs for pointing it out.
Nice.
And then right here, can Ben give some stats-backed odds on the probability of Wando going ahead of Cunningham this season and a breaking Donovan's record next season?
Just going to drop this? Just drop this on me? One second. I didn't drop it on you.
Tom from Pensacola wants
but
to
Wando
know.
Is now the all-time leader in road goals in MLS. Yeah, that's correct, I believe.
That is correct.
Yeah, that's
– I can move on to
him. I mean, the odds are
– He is a incredible, incredible story in person.
So like, to pass
– It's really unbelievable.
To pass Cunningham?
Yeah.
So he needs 3 goals to pass Cunningham. He's going to play – And
doesn't matter. I'll guarantee that he gets there.
Yeah, this year.
Whoa.
He ties him. He at least ties him.
Well, luckily, so
Chris Wondolowski.
San Jose is not playing this weekend, so he's not going to miss a game because of this. So he's got 7 games, scored 3 goals.
At Toronto. Ooh, tough one there. Home against Houston.
He's scoring.
Could do it at DC. Could do it versus Chicago. They're bad right now.
Guys,
he's scoring a little bit more than one in every 3 games over the past couple seasons.
That makes it tight.
It's extremely tight.
Guarantee.
Weeby's is going to throw out a Wando Guarantee right now. Okay.
Yeah, you got it.
Don't worry about it. I would say it's 50-50.
If
at best.
He gets this and ties it, maybe even breaks it, I think that the time that I've spent groveling and placating for that prediction last year.
So you don't even really believe this. You're just
I 100% believe it. The last game is at home against Minnesota.
So what
happens? That's garbage goal central.
Not after what we've seen over the past couple of weeks.
Also, DC hasn't given up a goal in 3 weeks.
Well.
So what happens if he doesn't pass Cunningham?
I mean, I didn't say pass, I said tie. First
what?
Of all.
That's what he said?
I didn't readjust anything. Yeah. I didn't readjust anything. Nothing happened.
Oh, to tie? Well, that's nothing.
Can people continue?
2-7?
Oh, it's 3? Okay, he's passing. He's passing.
Okay, there we go.
All right.
He's passing.
Guaranteed. Done. If he doesn't do it, then, you know, the status quo continues, which is people mentioning Wando every time they see me.
How about this one? Denise from Washington Heights. Atlanta doesn't deserve to make the playoffs. They have, how would you say, the opposite of grit.
That's a take.
It is a take.
Call it Atlanta soft.
Four straight games without a win. They had four straight wins before that. And now it's...
How many? There were almost, I think all of those were on the road?
Yeah.
By the way, now they're off until September 10th. Then it's home games here. Dallas at home, New England at home, Orlando at home, LA at home, Montreal at home, Philly at home, at New England.
That's Minnesota like, that's like six
home,
wins right
Red
there.
Bulls,
yeah, but the six
home
games,
versus Toronto.
It's such short.
But that schedule
turnaround.
Is so easy.
No, but you, but it makes it tougher if you're playing three home games in 7
know,
days.
Yeah.
You can't start everyone
and
every
you start
game.
To pile it up to where it's like 6 and 18.
I think it's 6 it's,
like
it's 6 and 17, right?
Yeah,
or
yeah,
7
yeah,
and 17. Yeah,
it's
a lot.
Intense.
But I mean, like you just read off those teams. How many of those teams are in the playoffs right now? Like one? Like one.
Yeah.
Or two, I think.
Okay, FC Dallas is desperate.
Sorry, four. There's only four wins.
Yeah, but
in
you're
there.
Playing desperate teams. New England's desperate. Orlando's desperate.
New England's not desperate. Orlando's
bad.
Not desperate. These teams aren't desperate.
They
They're
are
done.
Desperate. There is just
we just guaranteed
just
it.
You
guaranteed
it doesn't mean that they don't still believe, okay?
It actually probably gives them more belief.
If you believe.
Yeah, you're right. It does give them more belief. Here's the thing about Atlanta's season. They have got to figure out how to win, and they've got to figure out how to win right now on a different home surface and a different home stadium than they played on all year long. Like, their season 100% hinges on Mercedes-Benz Stadium and their form there. So if they can walk in and be like, we're good to go, all power to
them.
Well,
they did it with Bobby Dodd.
They did it with Bobby Dodd, but this is not the same beast. I just don't think.
What is their record? I need to research the record.
Their record
turf,
at Bobby Dodd
no,
is
on
not,
turf this year.
At Bobby Dodd,
they
their
played,
home record already
they
wasn't like it was fine. 6-2-1.
Sounds pretty good.
I know.
They play DC and they can't beat DC.
I know they drew at Seattle. Who else would they have played on turf? Don't have to get used to it.
I don't know. Like, it comes down to Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Okay.
They got to win there.
Well, you guys are talking about standings. We've got an email here from Kevin in Milwaukee. He said, Weeby challenged us to pick our top six in the Western Conference at the end of the season. Like Max Arruzzi, I'm going to take my shot no matter how bad it is. Sounders, first place, 58 points.
Okay.
KC, second place, 56 points. Vancouver, third place, 53 points. FC Dallas, fourth place, 52 points. Portland Timbers, fifth place, 47 points, and the Houston Dynamo close it all up tied on 47 points.
The Timbers only
you
get.
You could throw any six teams in just about any order, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. But that one could make sense. FC Dallas feels high right now, but that's just because they're so low, like,
yeah,
from a morale and results standpoint.
He then, by the way, continued on if you want to hear the playoffs.
Sure, why not?
Houston's road form dooms them. Vancouver moves on. Only to lose out against Sporting KC. Super sub Mauro Diaz comes off the bench to get Dallas past Portland, earning himself two starts against Seattle, where the Texas team gets revenge. Seattle's hot streak runs out. Seth Sinovic scores the game-winning goal.
Like, this guy's got to be
Seth Sinovic only scores in the playoffs.
In the most boring Western Conference final ever. And after Open Cup, they're confident, but it's not enough to get Toronto from winning MLS Cup.
Okay.
That's a lot to deal with.
That is a lot to deal with.
Kevin from Milwaukee.
He said that Portland's only get – by the way, Milwaukee. Love it.
That's good Ben Bear content.
Yeah.
Right
like
there.
That one? Portland's only get 6 points in the last six games, according to him, just for the record.
So
Portland fans, get out of here.
Last one. Let's talk MLS Cup a little bit more. Mike, when was the last time MLS Cup was a rematch?
11-12, L.A. and Houston. Kalen Carr's not in the room. Otherwise, he would be like, come on, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Weeby was there.
That was for the 2012.
He remembers it vividly.
I do. Uh-huh. Talking to Bobby Boswell, he was very disappointed. I actually tried to go interview Kalen Carr. I was covering Houston, and I tried to go interview Kalen, and they would not let me into the trainer's room. They were like, he is not available.
He had just torn his ACL.
Yeah, I know. I talked to him about it recently, and we should ask him about it on the show. I'm sure we will around MLS Cup, but he said he actually regretted not talking to people, not saying more after that game, because it was kind of this really huge moment in his career for so many reasons. I'll let him speak to that. But that was a big game because it kind of cemented that Galaxy juggernaut there.
It's funny because it's
Beckham's legacy as
well. Well, it's also funny because it's always Houston, right? Because Houston played New England in back-to-back MLS Cups, what, 07, 08, 08, 09, 06, 07.
Yep.
They went to three straight in that span, and then the two straight where they lost to L.A. It was a pretty good time to be a Houston fan. And that is all we have in the mailbag.
That is it. That's it. Okay, 401-206-0MLS. That is the phone number if you need help remembering it. 401-206-0MLS. People hit us up all the time saying that they can only think of it in that cadence,
yeah,
by
it's
the way.
Amazing.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, I'm a tastemaker.
Yeah, huh?
That's what I'm saying to you.
Send us all your U.S. national team stuff.
Yes.
Questions, comments, reactions during the games, all of that stuff. Andrew Wiebe will be here next week. I will not. So he will be the one listening to your voicemails.
Yes.
So make them as long as
possible. Also, on Friday night, we will be listening to them as well.
Will we?
Will we? Plans are in the works, perhaps, for Red Bull Arena, Club and Country after the whistle. Look, we'll let you know. We'll be on the Twitterverse. Hit us up. Follow the Facebook page, facebook.com/extratimelive. That's all for us this time. Big thanks to Tim Howard. Always enjoy talking to him. Big thanks to you for listening. We'll see you on the other side.